over the last, I would say, 5 years, there have been some grassroots movements that have started in the states to ban the possession and sale and trade of shark fins. And this movement basically began on the West Coast in California and is now in place in 12 different U.S. states. And now there's an effort to take this to Washington and have a nationwide federal ban on the shark fin trade that would apply to the entire country. This has been a response to actually a lot of work that many of us have done to sound the alarm on the status of sharks worldwide and the fact that they've been depleted in many parts of the world, and a lot of that being due to something called finning, which is catching sharks, removing the fins, and throwing the rest of the animal back at sea, and so wasting the animal, plus it being tremendously inhumane. And so folks have taken this information and decided that we need to ban this trade within the United States. And my co-author and I, my co-author David Schiffman, who's now at Simon Fraser University in British Columbia, and I have studied this issue in depth. And we find that actually at this point in time, after 25 years of very hard work from many different groups, that in the United States we're sort of a model for sustainable shark fishing. And finning is not something that's a serious problem in U.S. waters. We have had a prohibition of finning in the United States for more than 20 years. And in fact, we have a fishery that's doing it right. So this kind of effort to ban the trade in fins in the United States, we think, is taking us in the wrong direction and actually punishing the wrong people.
Just so my listeners are crystal clear here, when we're talking about shark finning, we're not talking about anything that involves the removal of a shark fin. There are ways to do that sustainably and legally and that aren't wasteful, like dumping the whole rest of the body of the shark back into the water.
That's right. And we talk about that in our paper, that people get confused between a shark fishery and shark finning. And finning, technically, finning itself is catching a shark, cutting the fins off the shark live or dead at sea, and then throwing the rest of the animal away at sea. That's something that just about all of us oppose, including commercial fishermen who are fishing legally and sustainably. Nobody's interested in supporting that. That has been illegal in the United States, as I said, for more than 20 years. What we really need to keep our focus on is sustainability in all of our fisheries. And sharks are fish. They're not mammals. They're fish. They are vulnerable to overfishing. But in the United States today, we actually have a number of what are called bright spots of sustainable shark fishing, in which these resources can support a fishery that's using the meat, using the fins, and even other products from the sharks. So the idea of throwing the fins away from legally caught, sustainably managed fish, in this case, doesn't make any sense. It's wasteful, and it's taking us in the wrong direction in terms of what conservation should really be all about.
And you've said that a law like the Shark Fin Sales Elimination Act of 2017 that's currently in committee in Congress, that this is actually going to hurt the guys who are doing it right and following all the rules and could actually benefit the bad actors.
Yeah, the U.S. fishery is actually a very small player on the world scene in terms of shark fins. So we're doing it right. And we provide to the international market maybe about 1-3% of the fins that are exported or imported. So by turning off that legal and sustainable fishery, we're actually punishing folks that are doing it right, and we're rewarding potentially the countries that are doing it wrong, that don't have anti-finning laws or aren't fishing sustainably, don't have any fishery management plans that have been scientifically based. So the little bit of market share would be taken up by those. A lot of people who support the idea of a ban look to the precedent of elephant ivory and say that when the United States stepped up to the plate and banned the import of elephant ivory into this country, that stopped the illegal poaching of elephants in Africa. There's actually three problems with that analogy. One is that people don't hunt elephants for their meat, unlike with sharks, which actually provide a very serious amount of protein, and especially in developing nations, and also some developed nations worldwide. So the whole animal can be used, unlike the case with elephants. Secondly, when elephants were being poached for their ivory, the United States was the major player, the major consumer of elephant ivory. So when we said no more, that really had a huge impact on the trade in that product, and that's just not the case with sharks. We're a very small player. And finally, elephants are still getting poached. And as a matter of fact, I wouldn't say that that was a bad thing to do to stop the import of ivory, but what's happened is it's driven that whole practice underground, and now it's hard for us to even know how many elephants are getting killed and poached for their ivory, whereas before there was at least some numbers to track. So it's a false precedent, and we think that the folks who have their hearts in the right place and want to save sharks would be very disappointed with the actual consequences of this federal fin ban.
Can you tell me about how the proposed federal law would impact the importation of fins from, say, as you already mentioned, countries that aren't harvesting them sustainably?
Well, one of the things that the supporters of the fin ban point to is that it's hard to track where fins come from. So by putting in a blanket ban on all shark fins, no matter where they come from, it would basically stop the imports, those that still exist that don't come through the states that have banned it. But it would also stop, obviously, the trade from legally caught sharks in this country. And I'm very much in support of ending the imports of any shark products from any country that's not sustainably fishing for sharks, especially those that are still practicing finning, and there's fewer and fewer of those every day. Not that there still isn't a big problem on the high seas, but it's not here. So I'm supportive of that idea of stopping the imports. We do have authority to do that. And furthermore, we can put into place a tracking and traceability program for U.S. caught shark fins that would be certified as sustainably caught, sustainably harvested, and sort of made in America, which, you know, kind of goes along with sort of the political climate right now. So I think those kinds of moves will be much more productive and are certainly fairer to the fishermen than just a blanket ban.
To your knowledge, is there anything in state or federal law currently that prohibits the importation of shark fins from some of these places?
It's not practiced except in those 12 states where they've banned possession of and sale of fins. They have the authority within the state to stop it, although there are loopholes and fins still come in and transit through those states. So that's an issue on the state level. On a federal level, no, that it's not done yet. But we do have authority, and that authority is practiced at the various ports, to stop the import of fishery products that don't meet our standards. So that's done for other kinds of fishery products, other kinds of fishes, and there's no reason why we can't do it for sharks. In addition, there's efforts underway to craft alternative legislation to the fin ban that would increase the authority for us to do this on a federal level and stop the import of shark products from those countries that are not practicing sustainable shark fishing.
I was hoping you could also, say something or give me some insight regarding there seems to be a sense of cognitive dissonance when it comes to understanding this issue. Because, here we've got your study and officials with the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission saying, this proposed federal bill is perhaps well-intended, but it's not going to really be effective. And then on the other hand, you have this letter that was signed by operators of more than 100 dive shops around the state, and sent to Florida's congressional delegation a few months back asking them to support this bill. And the bill itself has 8 co-sponsors who represent different districts in Florida.
The problem is that the backers of this bill have used an emotional argument, and they have presented the need for this bill with photographs of sharks that are being finned in places around the world that's not happening here in the United States. Now, let me step back for a second and say that I have been a shark researcher for more than 40 years. I've been here at Moat Marine Laboratory for coming up on 30 years. I have been one of the leading proponents and activists on the shark conservation front. As a matter of fact, I was promoting the idea of sharks in trouble before my colleagues would agree with me back in the late 1980s, and have been very active on this front ever since. So I've been immersed in this. I am a shark conservationist. I want to see the right thing done. But we're not putting good information in front of the legislators and in front of these other stakeholder groups to explain to them that this emotional response of banning finning and fins in the United States is not going after where the problem exists. It's an international problem. It's an overseas problem. And the idea that if we do it here is going to lead the rest of the world to adopt this is misguided. We need to hold up the model for how to do it properly, how to sustainably fish for these animals, and how to use everything that we can from them when we catch them legally. By withdrawing from the market and withdrawing from the marketplace, we essentially lose our place at the table to walk other countries over to sustainability, because we tell them, no matter what you do, we're not going to agree with the take of shark fins. I just think it's going to be ineffective, and we're punishing the wrong people, and we're also singling out shark fin soup as the enemy. The soup is not an enemy. The soup is a use of the shark, and the enemy is killing too many sharks. The mortality of sharks worldwide needs to come down, and the way to do that is to make our fisheries sustainable. And we've done that in the United States. We need to show other countries how to do the same thing.
Are you a little puzzled about why we are where we are right now with this proposed bill? Because, I mean, it's not like this idea of sustainable fishing when it comes to basically every other popular fish species that we allow. This already exists. This isn't a new concept.
To be honest with you, I feel a responsibility of having, you know, rung the alarm bell so loudly to say, you know, sharks are in trouble. They need our help. They need our help. We've gotten the public completely switched around from what it was in the post-Jaws era of let's kill every shark out there. They're man-eaters. To now, we have to save every single living shark, that we have to preserve these animals. Every one of them deserves to be left alone. And so the culture has gone so far to the other side that what those of us who look at the data and deal with rational fisheries management and deal with real conservation as opposed to preservation, it's telling all of us we need to pull everybody back a little bit and say, here's how you do this effectively. You don't take these positions and enact these laws that don't solve the problem, that hurt the wrong people, and then think that the problem is taken care of. And that's another part of what David Schiffman in my article goes into, is that we're worried that by putting in this ban on the fins in the United States, that the public will now think that the problem is solved worldwide, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, I know that you have, you know, submitted your findings to state wildlife officials, and, you know, I assume that probably was weighed heavily in terms of them putting out their own statement where they're in agreement with you about this proposed federal law. And I know you're a scientist, you're not a lobbyist, but I mean, do you plan on, or have you taken your findings to members of Congress who are pushing this?
Oh, yes. I mean, I actually started writing to members of Congress more than a year and a half ago. We've had direct exchanges with both senators, Florida senators, and with a number of the representatives in the House as this bill was beginning to appear on the federal level, because, you know, I wanted to make sure that they were getting good scientific information, that they were getting more than just the sort of the emotional plea that was being peddled from one office on Capitol Hill to another. And they've responded very, very positively, very logically, that yes, this is not the way we want to go. This is hurting Florida fishermen, but worse, it's not going to solve the problems of shark conservation. So we continue to have exchanges with them, and I'm not going to make this a crusade. I just want to advocate that people get the facts in front of them and make decisions when it comes to policy based on fact and not just emotion.
A bit of a sidebar here, but you had brought up shark fin soup a little bit before. Of course, known as a prized Asian delicacy believed to improve sexual potency. I was just wondering if, as far as you know, has there been any significant research to either support or refute such claims?
Well, it actually goes deeper than it just being involved with potency. It goes to more of a cultural tradition in Asian cultures, and, you know, especially within China. Shark fin soup has been served as the sort of the ultimate in the top of the line kind of product for esteemed guests, especially at, you know, events like weddings and big banquets and that sort of thing. Because of the outcry over finning, the Chinese government has cut back on its serving of shark fin soup at government functions. But it continues to be still something that families esteem. This is a cultural choice. You know, they're not promoting it as a cure for cancer or anything like that. I wouldn't be supporting a product that did that. They're just saying it's, you know, it's what we believe is like our Thanksgiving dinner, essentially. And so by saying that this soup is of itself evil is creating a cultural clash between the West and the East. Who are we to tell them that? If we're killing too many sharks just for soup, that's obviously a problem. But actually, the fin trade has been going down in recent years, whereas the consumption of shark meat has been going up. So the problem worldwide is much more complicated than just shark fin soup. And again, if we look to what's been done in the U.S. over the last 25 years on both state and federal levels, we see a model for how to properly manage our consumption of sharks, keep things in balance, and at the same time bring shark populations back as is happening now on the East Coast of the United States.
Florida lawmakers this year had considered a bill that would have made the shark fin trade illegal in the state. What actually ended up passing in the legislative session was watered down from that quite a bit. Could you maybe give us a little insight into the measure that passed in the state legislature this year and I guess what that would do and how you think that would impact the sustainability of shark populations?
Well, I'm actually very proud of what we've done within the state of Florida in terms of this policy, because the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission has taken a stance that this ban is very wasteful, that we're managing our sharks properly and our fisheries properly, and we have a fairly important shark fishery in the state of Florida that has economic value. So why do we have to throw away something from, you know, throw away a resource that's not being overfished? The legislators in Tallahassee were presented a bill that's similar to what's happening at the federal level now to ban the possession and sale of fins in the state. And they studied it. They considered the weight of the scientific data and facts. And to my delight, they decided that a ban was not needed. But what we should do is make it a more serious offense if any of the fishermen in Florida are caught finning, cutting the fins off and throwing the rest of the animal away, which has been illegal in Florida for some time and on the federal level for decades. So they transformed that bill from one of a fin ban to making the penalties much stiffer for any fisherman that's caught finning. That I absolutely support. I proposed to FWC a 5-point approach to doing this right, and the first of those 5 points was to make the penalties for finning more serious, and it's great that Florida has stepped forward and done that.
Just to be you know, perfectly clear, the law that did pass, you know, folks who are caught could potentially face jail time and monetary penalties, and of those, of course, those can increase with multiple offenses. And, you know, commercial and recreational anglers could even see their licenses suspended or revoked.
And not only that, but their boats can be confiscated if they really have serious offenses. By the way, we've looked at the scale of cases of finning in the United States, and Congress asked for a report from the National Marine Fisheries Service Office of Law Enforcement about this, and recently got the report that said that between the years of 2012 and 2017, there have been 22 cases of finning in the entire country that have led to charges. And of the 22, almost all of them involved just a few sharks in somebody's catch. Now, there was a pretty egregious single case that was, I forget what year, but in which a boat had something like the fins of more than 500 sharks on board. That, you know, that's a very serious offense. We need to punish people that do that. But it's extremely rare, and it's not something that's out of control in U.S. waters. And the commercial fishermen that are doing this, that are fishing for sharks for a living, they just hate this. They hate to hear about this because they know people paint a broad brush and makes every commercial fisherman out to be doing something like this. It's just not the case. These are outliers, and when we find them, we need to punish them severely.
Well, it sounds like what you're telling me is that nationwide and in Florida here, for the most part, the recreational and commercial fishing industries, folks involved, you know, they understand this. The penalties are effective as a deterrent, and people understand they want to be part of a sustainable practice.
Yes, and it's not to say that we don't still have some challenges. There are still some species and populations of sharks that have a long way to go before they're rebuilt. Like the dusky shark is a species that everybody's focused on right now. But when you look at where we were 25 years ago and then look at where we are today, we have scaled down the fishery to the proper level. We have certain species like the black-tip shark that are not overfished anymore and completely rebuilt and healthy that make a great target for a directed fishery that's done sustainably. And we have the return of even the super predators, the great white shark, that's coming back in its numbers along the U.S. East Coast because of reduction of fishing that was mainly getting those through bycatch. So we're really in a good place. I personally have been on the advisory panel for the National Marine Fisheries Service that looks at our fisheries for sharks and the other highly migratory species, the tunas and billfish, and have worked with the representatives of both the commercial and recreational fisheries for many years. Most of the time they've considered me to be their enemy because I have, as a scientist, I have constantly said the data are showing problems. The data are showing that we need to scale things back. Now that we've done that, now that we have a sustainability situation, now I'm saying, you know, this is okay to do this. And the fishermen are sort of They're just dumbfounded that I would be saying this. But I have said all along, guys, I was for sustainability. I'm not a preservationist. And, of course, the supporters of the fin ban, the folks behind that that have seen David Schiffman's and my paper, they're starting to throw out all kinds of accusations that, of course, we're in the pocket of the commercial fishing industry or that we're getting research funding from the commercial fishing industry. If that's the case, I'm still waiting for the check to arrive. it's just not the case. I have played the part of an honest broker in this issue. That's the part that I think scientists need to play in policy issues. We need people to step forward. We need scientists to step forward and peel back the emotion that people have in issues like this and show them the facts. And that's what David Schiffman and I have done.
At least when it comes to what's prevalent in waters around Florida, are there particular species of shark that are targeted or identified as being ideal for harvesting fins?
The number one ideal species that we have in off Florida shores for fishing, both commercial and recreational, for meat, as well as to some extent the fins, is the black-tip shark. This is a species that's very healthy now. It's actually a faster-growing shark, not overfished, and it makes for great table fare, and it's a good sporting fish as well for the sport fishery. The shark that's the most prized for its fins off of Florida and in the southeast United States is the sandbar shark. Sandbar is still being rebuilt, so we have a very limited fishery on the sandbar shark. We actually have what's called a research fishery, and it's going to take a while for that stock to be completely healthy again, but right now we're in a state where it's still depressed, but overfishing is not occurring, and what we want to do is get it to a state where it's no longer in an overfished state at all. So these are the top two species, and when you go to the northeast, up off of New England, you have species of these small sharks called dogfish that actually are very abundant, that are being currently sustainably fished in fairly large numbers because they're more prolific and faster growing. And they're being used not only for their meat, but also for their fins very heavily. These are the kinds of successful models that we need to really focus our fishery on. And one of the problems I think that we've had in fisheries management is that there's been very little in the way of attempts to incentivize the fishery to do one thing or another. It's been more reactive. So as the fishery has moved to a species that's not very sustainable, and then that species has gone down, then we've banned that. And as they move to another species, we've prohibited that species. So now we're dealing with a list of more than 20 prohibited species of sharks and a shrinking number of ones that are sustainable. And we've gotten to that point then, you know, by kind of attrition, and the guys that are left in the fishery are now doing it right. So I would like to see us be a little smarter about this and incentivize and direct a little bit more. And coming back to the shark fin ban, it's just going in the wrong direction. It's not incentivizing anyone, and it's telling people that after 25 years of finally getting to the point where we're doing it right, we just don't care anymore, we don't like what you're doing, and we're going to just throw you out of business.
All right, and just as a final question here, you know, you had brought up a bycatch a few moments ago, and I wanted to see if maybe you would talk a little bit about a peer-reviewed moat study that was published last summer in Fisheries Research, looking into the survivability of sharks, you know, after catch and release. It's something that, you know, we can document bycatch in commercial fisheries, but how do we know whether the animals they release actually survive?
Yeah, a very important point. Just because an animal is released at the boat doesn't mean it's surviving. And this is where science can really help with this. And here at Moat, we've done a series of studies under our former staff scientist, Dr. Nick Whitney, using various devices to track these animals after they've been released. And we're reporting that those data to National Marine Fisheries Service, which then can use the results to plug into their fisheries modeling and apply a certain percentage to the sharks that are released and say, you know, X number of them most likely died, so we have to include that as part of the, essentially part of the catch or the, or part of the take. We just completed a study published a month or two ago on the recreational post-release survivorship of the black-tip shark, and working with fishermen actually down the Charlotte Harbor area and down in the Keys over a period of 2 years, determined that the release and survivorship rate of those animals by the recreational charter captains is very good, very high, that about 90% of black-tip sharks that are caught and released by the sport fishery are surviving just fine. So we take the other number, the 10%, and that gets plugged into the models of in terms of the fishery interactions with those sharks, and becomes part of how you manage the fishery. It's complicated work. A lot of the fisheries modeling is still an inexact science, but it's made great strides over the last 20 years. And you know, as always, we advocate that we use the best available science to make these decisions.
Thank you, Dr. Huter. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.